Hello and welcome to the 11th episode of Season 3 of the Ubuntu UK podcast. It's Monday the 5th of July 2010, and in this episode we're going to talk about the O2 juggler and the commitment and the community, and we will of course cover the latest news, events, command line live, a bit about Ubuntu, and go over your feedback. I'm Laura Cowan, and with me this week are...
Pointing at me isn't going to work on a podcast.
Oh, probably... it just says dot dot dot.
That's not dot dot dot, that's Alan.
With me this week are Alan Pope.
Hello, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
Fine, thank you. Yeah, it's nice to have you back.
Thank you.
It's been a long time, hasn't it?
Yeah.
I've been doing some fun things with Ubuntu.
Have you?
Graphing my power usage.
Yes,
I got a cable from Andy Stanford Clark via you.
Oh, yes.
A couple of weeks ago.
Via me.
Oh, yeah. And via Tony, yeah. And I've got it plugged into my current cost thing that measures the power usage of my home. And I've got that plugged into my PC, and it's generating graphs of the last 10 minutes, last 24 hours of, you know, usage, power usage in the house. It's quite interesting because I can phone up home and say, are you hoovering? Good. Or turn the oven off. Or other things to hope she reduces the power usage at home.
And has it worked?
I'm more aware of it, that's for sure. And I've got it auto refreshing on a web page, but I'm thinking actually, and we might come to this when we talk about the juggler, other ways of presenting this information that's not buried on a web page somewhere. I need it to be more apparent and more obvious, this information. But yeah, it's been good fun. And I have reduced some of the load because I've switched off my desktop PC and I'm now using a Revo as my main desktop, which is much less powerful.
Much less, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a good idea.
Cool. So, Tony, what have you been doing?
Do I not get my surname?
Tony Whitmore, have you been doing?
We never say surname.
I know, but Laura decided to introduce herself with a surname and you with a surname. I just want parity. I don't want to feel like I'm sort of lesser.
He's in a right grump. He hasn't had enough flapjack, that's what it is.
He's too absorbed in sound kit things.
Mm. I updated a bug on Launchpad.
You went on Launchpad?
I went on Launchpad. I had a request.
Remembered your password.
It's that time of year.
I use Revelation. I had a request saying that a bug I filed against 904 needed updating, or is it still a problem, on the MPCL, graphics driver, auto detection bug. And I managed to find my MPCL, and then I managed to get Lucid on it eventually. With a bit of tinkering.
That bug report prompted you to get the hardware out of the box and check that it was still a valid bug.
I try to be a good community member.
You're a good man.
It's very laudable.
That's quite good, actually.
Yeah. I normally get the emails, look at them, think, yeah, I should do that.
Well, to be fair, it did auto-expire. It was about a month overdue from where it should be. But yeah, I got Lucid on it, and the bug was no longer there, so I felt quite good about that.
Cool.
And I played with an iPad.
Oh, yes, so did I.
Are you tainted? Is that why you're grumpy?
Right, get out. Get out.
It was quite nice. There were some good apps and some not so good apps.
It's a computer.
It is a computer. I was shown some HD video running on it, and that was quite nice. I could see if you're on the move on a train or something, you might be quite good.
My son works in GameStation, and they're taking them in already as exchanges for games.
Yep. How expensive are the games?
you give it in, and you get a nice big credit note for PlayStations and Xboxes.
And then they sell them secondhand?
Hmm?
Wow.
Really? That's interesting.
I've been to UK Podcast Sport to you in association.
Game Station.
And that's Simon Dunville.
Yes. And my headphones have unplugged. 2 seconds.
What have you been doing, Simon?
I'm near myself. What have I been up to? I've been getting a life.
Probably. Really?
I've done very little.
Sorry, I was actually taken aback by that.
Went silent.
You've got to do it. You've got to do it once in a while.
Yeah.
It's summer. It's epic out there. Why sit glued to these damn computers? Now I've been out.
You can take your laptop outside.
Okay, that's what I've got an Android phone for, but I try not to use that. Although the wife would tell me different, but I've been.
You've been sat in Costa Coffee, haven't you?
I have.
According to your Twitter account.
Because there's Wi-Fi and...
No, I just use Foursquare. Costa in... Another town. Or another town.
Yeah.
No, well.
You're all out on the product placement tonight.
I know. Check me out.
Yeah, so if anyone would like to sponsor the show, specifically anyone who wants to give us iPads or coffee. Then
Laura, what about you?
So I've been writing a synopsis for me as a book in the Human Library. And I'm the female IT geek book.
What does that mean?
Human Library, if you want to have a look, it's humanlibrary.org. It's a way of trying to challenge preconceptions and stereotypes and prejudices. So you think at what, well, you can have a, you have a look at the list of books available and you decide that you want to talk about, talk to somebody about their facial disfigurement or how it, what it's like being a police person, police officer, and you book them out for 45 minutes and then you sit and talk to them and you can ask them questions and basically
Saw this on the TV.
Was something about it last year, I think.
And there's like ex-criminals and all kinds of things.
Anything at all, where people might have a preconception about you, and it can be pretty much anything really. So she's, the woman who's organising it is trying to challenge the idea of what geeks are like, in particular female geeks in this case. So I'm going to be a female IT geek book at the Human Library at WOMAD, the World Music Festival in Wiltshire, the same day as org, which is why I can't go to org.
And so people can book you for 45 minutes and talk to you about what your life is and how you don't fit the stereotype they probably have in their head.
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, I can find out what the stereotype is from them. So it's a two-way thing, because I get to, I might have a preconception about what their preconception is.
Right.
And it turns out that people don't really think like that or whatever. So, yeah, I just talk to them. They can ask me questions and I can ask them questions.
Sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
And there's loads of different books there. So.
Is there a problem with it being self-selecting, and that the people who are going to be talking to you are people who are likely to not have preconceptions or likely to be aware that they have them and therefore will be more open to not having them in the future?
I think everybody's got preconceptions. It just depends how negative or otherwise they are. And I think, well, it's obviously going to be self-selecting to a point, but the idea is that you look at the list and go, okay, well, I don't know anything about that, or I have a really bad attitude towards accountants or something like that, and you go, okay, well, I'm going to find out what accountants are really like. There is an accountant book on the website, and you can go and talk to them and find out that
that's really,
really
cool.
Quite normal people.
And is it all going to be recorded and available for us to check out later on?
No, but I will blog about it.
Yeah. Cool. That's a shame.
So if you're going on to WOMAD, they can book you out for 45 minutes.
Yes.
Excellent.
So your number one fan, Neil Wallace, could turn out to WOMAD and book you out for 45 minutes.
What a fantastic idea. Right, on with the show.
The telecommunications company O2 recently did something silly, which was to put up a gadget on their website for £50. This then resulted in everybody else in this room going all gooey and excited and ordering lots of them. Alan, in particular, I think, managed to order about half a dozen.
Three.
One of which he gave away.
Yeah, one of which I gave away at Odd Camp.
Very true. Yeah. And Simon bought some as well.
I bought two. One for me, one for my boy.
Laura stole one of Alan's.
Yep.
So what are they? What are they called?
Joggler.
A joggler.
Yes. It's made by a company called OpenPeak.
Right, okay.
And it's a PC in a very small box.
Can you buy them from OpenPeak directly?
No, I think OpenPeak sell them to other hardware device manufacturers, right, and they sell them to other people who then sell them on.
So what is it?
It's an EPC without a keyboard.
Yeah, it's like a 1.3 gigahertz Celeron with half a gig of RAM, something like that.
It's a very nice touch sense touch screen.
Oh, yeah, it's got a touch screen, yes.
It's about this big.
Again, that doesn't work well.
The amount of practice on this whole podcast.
7-inch screen, isn't it?
Yeah.
Seven-inch screen.
But it's really nice. It's no bevel on it or anything. It's just this complete glass screen.
So it's like an internet tablet, like a Nokia N800.
Yes. But it's got a stamp.
It's not battery powered. You have to plug it in.
Okay. So you have to have it attached to the wall.
Not attached to the wall. Attaching to the wall is actually a bit tricky.
It has to be tight.
It's the mains outlet. Yeah. But it's got a stand, which is actually part of the heatsink.
Right, okay.
So that's actually attached to the CPU inside.
Fair enough.
So that's why you can't easily attach it to the wall, because the stand is fixed at like an angle, so the thing tilts up at you.
So what was attractive about it, other than the fact that it was £50?
That was a real
good opening
clincher
starter,
for me,
isn't it?
Because it was £100, and then they just half price. Well, I'll do half price.
Yeah, so it was £100, and they went down to £50, so
and
you
bought two.
Bargain.
Twofers. Great.
Okay, so why did you buy one then? Well, I mean, what was it, other than the fact it was £50?
Well,
I mean,
I've got an EPC.
If you wouldn't buy one when it was £100, why would you buy one when it was £50?
Well, because it's a nice little bit of kit. I've got an EPC, it's great.
okay.
at what it does. So and this is a nice little piece of hardware which can do things for you.
What
well, this, make it, me by default, it comes with a Linux-based operating system
okay.
with a front end that's written in Flash. Mm-hmm. But it's got a nice, like, you know, big buttoned interface.
It's right. a bit like the original netbook. What was
Zandros.
It?
Zandros.
No, yeah, the EPC. Special EPC
with interface, big buttons.
Big buttons, yeah. which is quite nice.
Yeah. And it does stuff like news. They market it as like a replacement for your fridge door, like where you put messages for other members of the family and you know, okay. shopping lists and stuff like that and notes and stuff.
But you can't take it down to the shops with you because you need to.
No, you wouldn't take your fridge door to the shops.
I might take the note from the fridge door.
But then you print it off on your printer.
This is kind of where the problem is, in that the thing itself, as you get it out of the box, it's not a lot you can do with it.
Yeah, it's got a few apps, and there's like an app store.
With about six apps in it.
And you install all of the apps, and there's like, right, okay.
The best one is Snake.
Yeah, a game.
Oh, what, the game?
Yeah.
So who runs the app store? Is that O2?
It's O2 branded, but it's hosted by OpenPeak. If you rummage around underneath, there's a bit of a community that's built up around hacking this thing and playing around with it.
So it's of perhaps limited use and functionality if you're using the stock firmware?
Well... Yeah. Kind of, yeah. I mean, it depends what you want out of it.
Hmm.
I mean, I've got a friend at work who's got one and his daughter plays the games on it. I'm not sure what longevity that would have.
Could you watch TV streamed online or something on it?
Not by default.
There are a lot of apps you can install that aren't in the App Store, but to install them, you've got to SSH into it.
Nice.
Which...
well, that's all the usability buttons.
Yeah, but that's because that's the hacking community around it. That's not the O2 provided branded stuff. The O2 provided stuff gives you a radio.
Yeah.
So if you think of a kitchen radio, but it's an internet radio. So you've got all the digital radio channels in the UK, all the local radio stations, and you can set them as favourites and all that kind of stuff. It's got an alarm clock, so you could put it beside your bed and have it as an alarm clock comes on, put the radio on, you know, as you would with an alarm clock.
Yeah, fair enough.
But like £30 more expensive than an alarm clock.
And it's, I guess it looks a bit like a picture frame, so you can presumably do a photo app.
You could do that as well. Okay. It's got a USB port, one USB port.
Okay.
Plug a memory stick in that's full of photos, it'll... slideshow the photos.
Yeah. And what's the connectivity other than that?
Wireless. Got
wired and wireless.
Wired and wireless, okay.
And it's got speakers on the back, so it can play music. If you plug a stick in that's got MP3s on it, it'll play those.
So now you see why it's quite appealing to geeks, because you can actually do quite a bit with it if you wanted to. Put it in the kitchen. I mean, mine's got a web browser on with Latitude running, so your wife can see when I'm on my way home.
Okay. So have you hacked yours?
Yeah.
Right, so what have you put on yours?
It's just Ubuntu.
Yeah. Right. How do you do that? Broadly.
Well, I spoke about this briefly last week. There are a couple of different ways, but essentially you download the netbook remix,
okay,
put it onto a USB stick. Remember not to trash your own Masterbeat record, otherwise you'll
top won't start.
And then you just plug it into the Joggler, boot it up, and away you go.
Yeah, by default, it'll boot off of a USB stick that's plugged in.
Nice.
Instead of the operating system. It's a bit of a quirky device, though. It's not got a BIOS. It's got EFI, a bit like a Mac.
Right,
so it's a bit quirky, and once you get your head around to that, and you have to tweak the boot process on the USB stick. But there are pre-built images you can just download and blat onto a USB stick, and you're done.
So I finally got round to playing with Alan's spare juggler.
Spare juggler.
Last weekend, was it?
Something like that.
After quite a while.
What did you do to it?
I did exactly what Simon said about putting a USB bootable Ubuntu netbook, but the special juggler version with all the fixes in. The device itself I don't find that interesting, but I quite like to use it for prototyping. As a touchscreen. Coming back a little bit to what Alan was saying about displaying current cost stuff on it.
Yeah.
So I was trying to get it so that it would do a full screen browser, so you could have kind of JavaScript based things in it. But so that you can't just drop out of the web browser easily, so it just becomes an appliance.
Like a kiosk mode.
Kiosk mode, basically, yeah.
Didn't you try that with Chrome?
I tried that with Chrome, and you can get into full screen from Chrome, but you can't get back out again because you've got to press F11 and you can't get to the on-screen keyboard when it's full screen.
Ah, yeah, that's one of the other things. It's only got one USB port. So if you're booting off the USB stick that's plugged into the USB port, you've got nowhere to plug a keyboard in because it has no hardware keyboard built in because it's a touchscreen only. So what most people tend to do is plug a hub, a USB hub in, and then into that you plug a mouse, a keyboard, and a USB stick, and then it becomes somewhat less of a useful little device.
But it's only for setup. Yeah, it's a PC then. But the point was, I wanted to just be able to set it up, and then it would be a kiosk without keyboard and things, but I couldn't get the keyboard bit working because I didn't have a hub that would allow the USB boot to work.
So can you actually blat the default install and replace it with Ubuntu using the internal storage?
You could, but it's only got 1 gig of internal storage.
Right.
So what most people tend to do is use a USB stick, because a USB stick could be bigger.
Yeah.
And also it means that you have a back out in case that you mess the USB stick up. You just pull it out, turn it off, turn it on again, and you boot to the operating system on the internal disk. So it's, you don't completely mess it up by blatting.
Potentially.
You just trash your laptop instead.
Yeah. Okay. So other than a current cost display, any other useful Ubuntu or Linux based applications?
Used it for watching TV. It with the BBC News running full screen. And because on my desk I have two PC screens, and the Joggler fits nicely in between those two screens on the desk, so it doesn't obscure the two PC screens, I can have the TV running on that while my PC is doing other stuff, and I can even shut down the PC and the news is still going, or the radio is still going. So it's,
helps you multitask.
Yeah.
Okay, so other than a little bit of an entertainment station and tracking your other half to find out where they are on the way home station.
Well, the built-in software lets you send text messages to it. It assigns it a mobile phone number.
Right.
So you get like
50
free text, and you can top that up through the website. The software's not great. I mean, it is all Flash-based, but that does mean you can actually download Flash files, like Flash games, like you get to get them from the web, and you can spark them up on the local machine. And because many Flash games are built to use with the mouse, they work well with a touchscreen.
Yeah, I could see that being insane, like particularly kids' games or something.
Exactly, yeah. So I've downloaded a couple of games off of CBeebies website. But the problem is, because the CPU is a bit gutless, it's only a 1.3 gigahertz Celeron, it can be a bit sluggish, especially because it's Flash, you know.
Yeah, that's fair enough. So, if you have got any interesting things that you've done with an O2 Joggler, or can think of anything that you'd like us to try, and by us, I mean the other three people in this room, then why not send
us... Dave has one too.
Dave has one too, excellent. Yeah. Okay.
It's so taken we'll nominate. Me 2 months to get round to playing with poppies.
Fair enough.
Joggler.
And send your suggestions into podcast@ubuntu-uk.org.
In the news this week,
the BBC have joined forces with ITV, Channel 4, 5 and others to produce a platform for streaming TV based on an open framework. The solution, called Canvas, has drawn criticism from Sky and Virgin Media by using license fee money to help support the project.
Sour grapes.
Wow, aren't you sick of having all these different ways of viewing TV? I mean, obviously this is very UK-centric, but it's the same in other countries. Like every organisation has their own content delivery platform, or whatever they want to call it.
The thing that annoys me is that they're talking about something that, quote, denied the existence of linear television.
Oh?
Exactly. This is sort of the phraseology that people start to talk about. What should be an interesting technical discussion about a way to deliver TV over your network is turning into a marketing exercise with people with using lots of buzzwords.
So this is to receive...
TV. Actually says leverage linear. It says leverage linear in this news article. That's it. I'm not talking about this anymore.
Well, I had fun with one of those people, Channel 5, just last night. Claire said to me, I want to watch a TV programme in bed. And I had my laptop with me. I said, OK, let's watch it. And you go to the Channel 5 website, and it will only let you view their past programmes if you're using Windows. And you don't even find that out until you sign up to their website. Yeah, which is shocking. And then when you hit the complain button and you fill in a form, it auto detects your platform and ticks all these boxes and puts crosses where your platform isn't supported, and it asks you for details that you fill in about why this is a sucky experience for you. And one of the options is a little drop down where you choose your version of Windows Media Player. Yeah, it's already detected that your platform can't run Windows Media Player.
Nice.
Although, on the plus side, I got a response in about 10 minutes.
telling you to
install Windows.
Nice.
Really?
So back to Canvas.
No.
That's all everybody would need to know about Canvas. That's covered that very thoroughly.
I just don't have... If that's the kind of stuff... You know, we've got BBC, we've got Flash, ITV have got Flash, Channel 4 uses Flash and YouTube, which is Flash, although maybe HTML5, and Channel 5 uses Flash and whatever this proprietary Microsoft technology. I don't hold out much hope for us being able to view this stuff.
True.
What? I don't get what it is. Is it for viewing it over your internet
connection? A unified platform for watching TV programmes on your computer.
He says that and waves his arms as if I understand what wavy arms means.
Well, at the moment, if you want to go to watch a BBC programme, you go to BBC's website. Mm-hmm. If you want to watch a Channel 4 programme, you go to Channel 4's website. This is going to be one platform.
You go to the TV website and it all gets fed into the same thing. And
Like TV catch-up brings lots of channels together and Seesaw brings lots of channels together. It's a thing like that.
I don't use any of those.
I don't use the TV, so I don't care.
Am I the only one who watches any telly?
Yes.
I started watching iPlayer on my phone.
Because you can.
Great, just because I can.
Try watching Channel 5.
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
Users of phones running the Linux-based Android operating system are twice as stingy as those using iPhones, apparently. Is this down to the open source effect, or are there just fewer good apps on Android?
Well, after taking a pasting last week from Popey, yes, I think it's a problem to do with free and open source software. Yeah.
Is it the open source effect?
The
free effect.
Yes.
People think that
all software should be free.
Yeah, but is it people who are buying the Android phones who do they expect Android apps to be free because they're based on Linux?
Are there just more free apps?
I think you're talking about it from a geek perspective. There are plenty of non-geeks who have no idea about the open source and free with the capital F nature of Android, and they just use it as a phone. I think there just are less decent paid apps on Android.
Are there non-geeks that use Android phones?
Yep.
That don't have a geek connection that encourages them to?
I mean, Android is a mainstream... You can go into a...
I know, I know you can get them, but all the people I know who've got them are geeks.
Yeah, but most of the people you know are geeks.
Most of the people I know that breathe in and out are geeks.
Yeah.
So does that mean that you're only going to get decent software if you pay for it? That's what you suggested.
Not really. You could get ad-supported software, and then you take the adverts out if you pay for it. Mm-hmm. But I think there's less of that high-quality paid stuff. I mean, well, I've got an Android phone, and I've only bought one app.
What was that?
A Twitter client.
I bought a Twitter client for my Nokia. It's the only software I've bought in a long time.
I bought a game. My first purchase for my Android phone.
My phone doesn't have a store.
Oh, aww. Nobody
Yours
changes.
Is barely a phone, that's why.
He can make calls and send text messages.
A rotary dial on it, for goodness sake.
The only mobile.
Oh, my God, yes. Compiz, the spinny cube software, has been rewritten in C++ in its new release, version 0.9.0.
Why?
Kiddo.
I have no idea.
What was it written in before?
C.
So they've just added two pluses and it's better?
Yeah, of course. That must make it better. I think they've merged a few projects as well. They've brought in some stuff from other Compiz.
Nomad and Compiz++ have been merged into Compiz.
And they've dropped Compiz Fusion, I think. Yeah.
So when does this hit Ubuntu and the like...
I think there's a PPA for it already, I think.
Yeah,
maybe.
But non-PPA? Is it just sort of rolled in, kind of?
I'm not sure, actually.
It'd probably be in 10.10, might it?
Yeah.
I'd have thought so.
Well, we've just had the freeze from importing from Debian.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So, for Maverick.
Yeah.
But that doesn't stop stuff getting in, if there's a good reason for having it.
Wow. Spinny cubes go all the way.
Oh, yeah, totally.
There's a business case for those.
Yeah, there's a surprising number of people who really love the spinny cube.
I love the spinny cube.
Builds of Ubuntu and Android for HTC's HD2 phone have been released for testing.
Yeah, it's quite a funky phone.
It is.
It's a Windows phone.
It is, at the moment it is.
Mm.
I saw one in Monaco.
Yeah. Get you.
When we were in Monaco shopping around. And the hardware looks absolutely lovely. I was a bit smitten.
It does look a gorgeous phone.
Where did you see it?
In It's one of the shops in Monaco, in that big expensive shopping centre where wandered around and couldn't
with
afford it.
With a bling.
Yeah.
Walked back out again with a carrier bag.
Yeah, that's it. I stole that as well. But no, the hardware, it looks absolutely swish. It's slim. I mean, the screen is massive and the bezel is tiny. It looks really, really
nice. It is a gorgeous looking phone.
And it hasn't got a rotary dial
on it. Hasn't got a rotary dial on it.
Is this you coming into the 21st century looking, although you were looking at a Windows mobile phone?
I didn't know it was Windows at the time. I assumed it was Android because, you know.
It's HTC, so they put their thing on the front of it and they all look the same, really.
Yeah, I thought it was HTC. I assumed it was Android. And it was only when I looked it up on the internet later that I realised it was Windows. It was only display model, so it didn't have a real display on it. But if I was to drop my phone and smash it into 1,000 pieces accidentally, I'd probably look at that one.
Even though it's a Windows mobile phone?
Well, if I could get Android or Ubuntu to run.
Right.
LightSpark, a modern, efficient and open-source Flash Player implementation, has reached a version 0.4.2, which includes support for H.264 videos on YouTube. The good news for Ubuntu users is that there's a PPA.
Mm. What's H.264 videos?
Codec.
It's used by YouTube. It's used by lots of things.
Just means you can play YouTube.
Yeah.
Just video. It's not like a full Flash Player, a full Flash environment, is it?
Not like for using on websites and things.
Like games and stuff like that. I don't know, actually. I've not tried it.
I think it says it's just video.
It's just for doing video, is it? Oh, and it drops to Ganache for anything other than video, doesn't it? It can, so you can have both LightSpark and Ganache installed.
Oh, right, okay.
And it drops to Ganache for the other stuff. There are some events coming up.
Yay!
That's fair enough. The second Ubuntu User Day will be on July the 10th in the Ubuntu Classroom IRC channel from 9:45 UTC until 3 o'clock UTC. That says 3 o'clock. I don't know if that's 3 o'clock in the morning or 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
It's all on one day, it says.
It's all on one day. Cool. On July the 11th, aimed at new users of Ubuntu, Ubuntu User Day will include classes on installing and setting up Ubuntu, a partitioning 101, command line basics, information about the kernel, and much more. You don't need to be around for the whole day to join in, so stop by. A complete list of courses is available and can be found on the wiki, and we'll post a link in the show notes.
Information about the kernel for new users.
Now, that might be interesting for, like, people testing. I think this is something that JFO's doing that we talked to him about in our interview.
It's Ubuntu Developer Week, again, from the 12th to the 16th of July. You can learn about developing on Ubuntu, packaging, the relationship between Ubuntu and Debian, improving Ubuntu, and loads more.
Yeah, there's loads of sessions on.
More IRC stuff.
Yes, all on IRC.
It's busy next week with the National City Learning Centres Conference running in Leeds in the UK, and speakers include BBC tech reporter Roy Keflin-Jones, Canonical's Matt Barker, and Occam's very own Laura Tchaikovsky.
So what are they doing there?
I think from memory she's talking about women in open source, but that could be a lie.
Yes, she's doing a section on Ubuntu women.
Okay.
We're going to do OrgCon.
I was going to say also, now with new confirmed attendee, Alan Pope, OrgCon on the 24th of July.
Yes, that's right.
You're going along to it. Where is it?
It's in London. It's on Saturday the 24th of July, and yes, there are going to be people there, including Cory Doctorow and others.
Tom Watson, the
MP. Tom Watson, yes.
And you.
And well, I'm not speaking right now, I'm just attending.
You're going along. Yeah. So if you want to go along and sit behind Alan in a talk.
And pre-chew my food.
Possibly rub his ears or something.
Sorry, private joke.
I'm good.
Not that private anymore.
It's time for a command line learn.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a little while. This one was sent in by one of our listeners, Chris Blow. And it's... let me set a scenario for you. You know when you're at the command line on a Linux system and you want to create a directory and then change into that directory to perform some other function?
Happens to me all the time.
You know how long it takes to do that?
Yep.
It must, you know, because you have to type in mkdir and then the name of the directory. And then you go cd and then the name of the directory. You know, seconds. If it is a drag. If you add up all the time you spent doing that when you could be doing something else, that would be quite a lot. Perhaps 5-10 minutes a year. But now there's a little good function that's on this lifehacker.com page, which we'll link to in the show notes, whereby you can create the directory and change into it in one go, thus saving yourself valuable key presses.
That's amazing.
It is. It's a bash function that you stick in your .bashrc file that literally creates the directory and then you move into it, called mukcd.
So it serves you three characters of space and a tab completion.
Yeah, Android joints, of course.
And maybe multiple tab completions, because it could be you're making a directory that's multiple directories deep.
Oh, that's true.
And it'll make all of them, and then you can CD straight into them. Mm.
That's
that
true.
That would be cool.
Actually, that's quite neat.
That is quite good, actually.
Okay, I retract my sarcasm.
there you go. Does it work with spaces? Yeah, it looks like it will be.
The example he gives it is, yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, without any slashes.
Yeah.
Well, if you've got a command line love you'd like to see us cover, why not send it in, and we can be sarcastic about that too.
Tony.
Thanks, Tony. You bring so much to the show. Right. I thought we'd talk about community. It's a wonderful thing, the community. Johnny goes on about it all the time.
Oh, really?
And it is. And it's great. And we all put in a load of work being around each other and getting things done and making Ubuntu wonderful. But what happens when... I can't be bothered.
When you run out of steam?
Yeah. Happens to everybody. You three and David would tell everybody about the fact that towards the end of the year, I normally go off and off and say, right, I'm leaving. I'm not going to it's not necessarily burnout, but it's the beginnings of.
I don't think that's unique to you.
I think it isn't. I think everybody goes through it.
A lot of people get that.
But within the signed up Ubuntu community, those that have been to Launchpad and signed the code of conduct, there's a little bit in there that says, you know, when you've had enough, you should be allowed to just walk away without any comeback whatsoever.
Well, it's not necessarily about comeback. It's more if you want to leave,
I agree.
Just hand over nicely. So you don't just you know shut down your email account, delete your Launchpad account, and you know what it's more concerned about is, let's say for example you were hosting this podcast on and yours was the only server that hosted it, and you decide I've had enough and you just pull the plug and walk away. Then that wouldn't be a nice way to do it. You know.
Okay, so there are ways for people to get out of the community, but are people dropping out? I mean, but you have to renew a membership every couple of years, is it?
Membership in terms of Ubuntu membership.
Yes, Ubuntu membership.
If you are an Ubuntu member, so you've gone through the, you've been doing work for Ubuntu for a while, and you've attended either in the past the community council meeting, or you've attended one of the regional membership board meetings, or a developer membership board meeting if you're a developer inclined rather than loco community inclined. Then, you get membership, and you get your Ubuntu email address, you get a subscription to Linux Weekly News, and then in 2 years' time, Launchpad will send you an email and say, renew it, and you just click a button.
All right, okay.
That's it.
Right.
You're renewed. You don't have to reattend.
You'd have to take the Pledge of Allegiance again.
No, you don't. Right, you don't have to sacrifice your firstborn child or anything like that.
In which case, if it's that easy, are there lots of people who don't do it? What's the burnout rate?
Don't do what?
Don't press the button.
There are some people who, I mean, being that I'm on the CC and we own the Ubuntu members group, I see the emails when people drop off the Ubuntu members group.
Right.
So I see when people renew as well.
Okay.
So I kind of have an idea of when people drop off. And some people drop off because they leave the project and they've switched to Debian and they're contributing to Debian. Or maybe they're contributing upstream, or maybe they're just, you know, taking some time off.
Okay, so I think that's why I was curious, because I'm trying to work out if there is a problem, because you're making a commitment to continue to contribute to, in this case, Ubuntu, but to whatever, you know, Floss project or whatever. And if there is a proportion of people who get going and then sort of drop off quite quickly, perhaps within the first couple of years, is there a problem there? Are we asking people to make too much commitment? Or should people be allowed to drop off?
I don't think anybody's asking anybody to put in any commitment. It's down to the individual, isn't it?
Well, we sometimes ask people to, you know, we ask favours of people. You know, we say, you know, could you take on this project or this team?
In fact, you asked me a question last week on RC. You asked me if I'd do something. And at the time I thought, yeah, I could do that. But I thought, do you know what? I'm really not at that point at the moment, because if I take this on, there's a commitment. And I'm not prepared to give the commitment right now, because, sure, I can do an initial order of something, of T-shirts, for example. But then I'm going to have to set it up so that can roll on. And that's, and just right now, I'm just not into doing commitment. So It's all about the sort of the guilt as well. And because it would be really easy to do, and to be honest, pretty trivial, but
You can that guilt word, you can be made to feel a bit guilty sometimes. Yeah. when you unsubscribe from something, or when you leave a forum, or leave a mailing list, or leave a group or a team, you feel bad.
Or flattered, perhaps. The flip side is to flatter to take on responsibility for something you're not really that interested in, but because, I don't know, somebody you respect has asked you to think about doing it, you might think, oh yeah, okay, I'll do that, and yes, I'm really pleased that so-and-so has asked me to take on this little bit of responsibility.
Mm. It is.
But then your heart's not really in it.
Yeah, and if you'd make an active decision to not be part of it anymore by unsubscribing, that's one thing. But if you just let it carry on and you press the button, but you're only half with it because if you say you're flattered to be part of it, but you can't really commit, that's a problem for everybody.
We do have that. We do have people who, it's fairly obvious, they got their membership 2 or 3 years ago, and when the renewal mail comes around, they hit the button, whether they're active in Ubuntu or not. I don't think we're looking to fix that. I don't think we're looking to try and, you know, say, well, you know, you're still a member, you should be doing something. But for some groups we are. For loco teams, we're renewing now, and we're saying your team of people is approved, therefore you get some extra benefits as a part of being an approved loco team. Mm. Now what we're saying is, we're going to have another look at you in 2 years' time, and if you're no longer active, then we'll make you unapproved, and as such, you don't get those benefits. And so, it is possible for people to, you know, step back as individuals, but also for whole teams to step back and wind down if they need to. Mm.
But one of the things about the open source, or certain projects within something like Ubuntu's got so much momentum, you hope it would carry on if anyone individual dropped out. And
that's the idea, yeah.
But a lot of the smaller parts of that project, that isn't the case. It does often still rely on one sort of key person, and if that person drops out, an initiative stops.
Mm-hmm.
And you can look at things like screencasts. It's probably a great example. So when you find you haven't got time to make any screencasts, there isn't a whole heap of other people generating them as well.
But that's not necessarily that specific example. So I started the screencast team, and it consisted of a bunch of people on a mailing list. And from my part, I probably didn't manage that team well enough to put in place people and the redundancy so that if I step down, other people can, you know, take my place.
Yeah.
And that's a good example of where that didn't happen.
Mm.
And there are other teams where that clearly has happened. So people have been able to step down from the website team or from, you know, translation teams, and people disappear. Maybe they're busy with family. Maybe they've got, you know, bereavement in the family that takes them away.
Yeah.
And there's no way we'd tell them, you know, you should feel guilty because you're being taken away for some family bereavement. That would be outrageous. So, you know, we should cater for people leaving or, you know, for their contribution to wax and wane, you know, as and when, you know, they're available, because they are volunteers.
I think one way to help in this situation is to get back with the people. I'm not convinced that online communities work that well without you actually getting together with the people. After Odd Camp, I was on a massive high, because all weekend I'd had a fantastic weekend with my friends and with other people and like-minded people. And I was bouncing all over the internet for the next couple of weeks saying, come on, when's the next meet? It was fantastic. And then slowly, nobody wants to play anymore. Everybody's gone back to their keyboards.
It's funny you should say that, because that, I believe that's true as well. For example, in Linux user groups in the UK, those Linux user groups which are geography-based, so one that's based around a county or a town, when they meet up, they seem to be stronger than, for example, a lug that's based around some other theme, like a common interest, or you know, something like the youth lug, or the army forces lug, or the LGBT lug, or they're built around a theme rather than a geography, and as such, because then partly because they never meet up, that does fall apart somewhat. And I completely agree. You know, when you meet up with people like us, we meet up every 2 weeks, roughly.
Yeah.
And sometimes not as often as that. And for example, when me and Dave went off to UDS and we come back and it's a bit stunted and we're trying to get ourselves going again because none of us have seen each other for like a month or more.
So just doing it online isn't enough, is it?
But that's difficult because, you know, if you're the translation team and you're translating Ubuntu into Spanish, okay, there's going to be people in Spain, but there's going to be people in other countries as well that are nowhere near you geographically, but happen to speak Spanish. Not every team can do that.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think Canonical are working on, which might help, is voice chat. Canonical internally are using Mumble, to do voice conferencing. And I know Dave is a big proponent of, you know, when you've got a problem, pick up the phone and talk to people.
Yeah.
And so if teams could talk to each other a bit more via tools like Mumble, then that might actually solidify the team and make it less likely to people drift and fall apart and so on.
Is it the, if you have a big argument, or if you have an argument on the internet, it's always a big argument.
Especially if it's in capital letters.
Yeah.
Lots of exclamation marks.
Mm. But the whole kind of, you know, people don't back down, they don't want to admit that they're wrong, and they sort of go off for a strop, either for substantial amounts of time or at least, you know, a short amount of time. But that tends to happen a lot less if you're face-to-face in a meeting with somebody. It's harder to tell them that you disagree with them in a nasty, aggressive way.
Because you can see the little face just crumple.
But partly because it shouldn't get to that stage. If you're seeing them more regularly, the chances that you're going to be typing angry text at someone, you know, is much less because you're looking at them, you know. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Although, you know, in computer communities, that's less likely because you could be in the same room and still type angry text at each other.
I'm doing it right now.
Oh, yes. So I don't think we're doing that much wrong. I think there's certainly some teams that could do things better.
Sure.
And individuals need to figure out for themselves what their level of contribution is. I don't think we can enforce anything. I don't think we should enforce anything. Yeah.
It's important not to feel guilty. I think that's the important thing. And don't make people feel guilty as well. If they can't do it or don't want to do it or just need a bit of a break.
But some people have difficulty finding that balance, don't they? They perhaps deep down know that they're doing too much.
Are you looking at me?
I'm not looking at anybody. I'm quite blatantly staring at a plate of flapjack.
Not a plate of flapjack.
The empty plate. But there are people who don't know the boundaries or don't realise that they are perhaps overdoing it until something breaks. You know,
I was subscribed to just about every Ubuntu mailing list, and the fire hose of mail coming in and replying to mails on like every single Ubuntu mailing list, and it just kind of got too much. So I've unsubscribed from all the teams that I'm not really a core contributor of, and now I'm only on like half a dozen mailing lists, and I find I contribute better to a smaller number of teams than trying to spread myself ridiculously thin across lots of things.
What made you realise that you were getting overwhelmed with information then?
I was getting annoyed with people. I was getting frustrated and annoyed and angry and cross and took a step back and thought, I actually thought I want to quit Ubuntu completely. I was that far that I thought, this isn't for me. I've had enough of these people. And then when I take a step back and look at my inbox and think, actually, it's just there's too much information. And I just need to like wind it back a little bit. And so I quit a whole bunch of IRC channels because I was sat in like 50 IRC channels, most of which I never read. And when I switch to a channel and I see a keyword like screencast or Ogcamp or something, and then I'll type a few lines and then I won't say anything there for another week. I think, well, what's the point of, well, you know, is there actually a value add I'm providing there?
Yeah, there is. So, there is, because you're a helpful bloke. But the problem is that it just gets to be too much.
And then I don't get anything done for myself, you know.
Yeah. And there's a world out that door, which is where I've been for the last 2 weeks, and there's a family to look, you know.
Should we all go and live in the woods? Dump these computers.
I'd love to.
With your Android phone.
As long as I can do Android phone.
Yeah. Only too well. Hand crank charger. You're laughing.
He'll spend his whole day cranking.
I read the O'Reilly book, Time Management for System Administrators.
I've not read it yet.
maybe now you've got all those lists.
I am not kidding. I really do have that book. It's next to my bed and I've not read it yet.
And whilst a lot of it is sort of in terms of the context of work and balancing, you know, activities at work and stuff, it does have some very good tips about, you know, leaving work behind when you go home, or at least sort of saying, you know, I'll do an hour tonight or 2 hours tonight, but then I'll go out tomorrow night and go to the pub or go have a meal with friends or just spend time with the family or whatever. You know, limiting the number of places you're getting information from. Unsubscribing from a mailing list every month. You know, just keep the list down until you get to the point where you really, really, really can't quit
it mailing list. It is difficult as a contributor in your spare time, in inverted commas, spare time.
Hmm.
If you've got a day job that isn't Ubuntu, you know, you've got a normal average person day job like all of us do.
Yeah.
And then in the evenings and weekends, you spend a bit of time doing, you know, contributing. Then it's difficult knowing when when to stop and when, you know, how much time is enough. Because, you know, if you've got meetings in an evening or and you've got to prep for those meetings, or then you think, well, actually, I've got to file that bug. And it kind of gets on top of you.
For me, but it's a case of not feeling that pressure. Like this... this bug that I talked about in the intro about this graphics problem, I had the email to do it. I left it in my inbox. I thought, oh, okay, time. I'll have a look at that. I'd quite like to do that and contribute. But I didn't let it get to me that I hadn't done it and it wasn't itching away at me to make sure I did get it done by the time it closed. I really think very carefully before joining another IRC channel, because I know that my information flow, I try to keep less than 10.
See, he's read the book.
I have read the book. But
you have mastered the addiction.
But I genuinely think carefully about adding another thing in, because I know that it'll become something I want to keep up with.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, you see, that's very true, because I, as part of my cull, I got rid of a load of IRC channels, I unsubscribed from a whole bunch of mailing lists, and also I went through all my bug mail from Launchpad, from all the bugs that I was subscribed to. Yeah. And there was loads there that, yeah, okay, some of them affect me now. Some of them affected me 2 years ago, and people are still commenting on how this thing's broken. And I'm thinking, what value am I getting from that? So I unsubscribed from a whole bunch of bugs. And incidentally, I found a bug unsubscribing. I must file that bug. So it's just a spiral. Yeah, because there's a bug in the unsubscribing from bugs thing. But yeah, I agree. I need to, you know, and everyone, if you're feeling overwhelmed, reduce the overload.
I like the blog post that you quoted once, Alan. Somebody saying that it wasn't that they didn't have time, it's just that they weren't prioritising things now.
Oh, that's Matt Zimmerman wrote a blog post. I think it was about when people ask, can you do this for me? And you say, I didn't get time to do it.
Yeah.
It's actually, I didn't want to do it. I chose not to do
that, keeping that in mind always helps me, because I just go, yeah, there's nothing wrong with saying, I just can't do that.
Mm. Yeah, no is a magic word that I find it difficult to say.
I like Simon's idea of going and sitting outside and enjoying the weather, particularly in the summer.
I tried that on Friday. I went out with Alan Lord and Alan Bell from the Open Learning Centre.
Yeah.
We were sat in a pub, drinking beer, and then all three of us get our phones out, start playing around with Android phones.
Could it possibly have been the company you were with?
Yeah, it could be. Yeah.
But yeah, even then you're outside, you're chatting, you're interacting with people.
Mm. My mum got us a garden parasol so that I could sit outside with my laptop.
Don't do it.
That's where these Pixel Qi displays that the OLPC has, we don't want them. We don't want them, because then we'll be outside and using our laptops outdoors. That's wrong.
I think if you feel your brain getting too overactive, then you know it's time to go and do something else.
Yeah.
If you can't get to sleep because you're thinking about that bug that you couldn't quite fix or work out what was going on, then too much.
Yeah,
that's kind of the balance point between being a normal person and being a serious hardcore geek where you stay up all night just regardless.
Yeah, I mean, I have my weekends where I do a Saturday, you know, and I'll geek out for the Saturday and I feel really good because I'm enjoying it and I'm playing around with technology and that's one of the things I like to do. But then I make sure I draw the line and then I have, you know, the evening off or the following day I'm going to do something else. And it's all right once in a while, but if it's every weekend or weekend or every evening...
It's addiction. It's simple addiction. Yeah. It's just mastering that addiction, isn't it?
Yeah. I'd be interested to know how other people cope with this and how people have left communities and how they've rejoined and...
Yeah, absolutely.
Read an online article by a woman who's a gaming geek, and I can't remember her name, but she considers herself a geek and she was asked what defines a geek. And she talks about how she'd been growing up and she was into games or computers or something, really, really into it. She had lots of friends who weren't geeks, but she grew up through her teenage years not knowing anything about makeup. And then she happened to do some kind of video, or she was on something like GMVT, GMVT? GMTV. And for that, she suddenly realised she didn't know anything about makeup. And so she went home and learned everything there was to know about makeup because she's obsessive. A geek and she has to do that.
Yeah.
And so now she's the expert among all her girlfriends.
Right.
And it's that kind of, I think that's probably more likely to lead to people burning out because that kind of...
Is that an obsessive personality trait though, rather than... Yeah. than
but
yeah.
but we, if it's a lot of us have that. Thing,
yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Send us your tips on what you do to keep balance, or have you failed and flown off the handle at some point and gone and, you know, told people to go away in not so nice language?
Or what subject did you learn obsessively?
Like yeah.
makeup.
And send us your feedback to podcast@ubuntu-uk.org.
It's time for the bit about Ubuntu.
Oh yes. I was expecting you to say something wrong, and so I can contradict you,
were ready
you
to
very
call,
quickly.
Yes, excellent.
And then I just can't. Oh yes,
he's nice. Given up. He has given in.
He is.
Has I beaten you all down?
Yeah.
Although actually, paved. I should have called it ecosphere.
Yes.
So I was wrong. Yes.
Yeah. Don't call it that.
Okay.
I'll do it, and then I can tell you off for doing it.
Okay. It's time for the ecosphere.
No, don't do that. Oh. See, there's a bit of shtick.
Oh.
I said shtick. What's first in the bag of eco things?
There's a bit. It's
there's a bit about
just a little bit.
Ubuntu Weekly News has hit its 200th issue and it's still going strong.
200. Excellent.
Yeah, Mark Shuttleworth blogged about it, and yeah, there was it's every week.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you read it?
Some of it.
It's quite long, isn't it? The posts are
yeah, it's quite bulky, and it covers stuff like you know, Ubuntu in the news and developments in, you know, packages that are new and stuff like that. But it's also got summaries at the very end of security updates and bug numbers and all that kind of, you know, stats, raw stats at the bottom. But it's got, you know, interesting stuff in the middle, news stories.
And they promote us as well sometimes.
Yeah, they do when I ask them to. No, they do. Amber Grainer, who looks after it at the moment, because it's had a number of people who've looked after it over the years. She's very good, and she's been subscribing and making sure she pastes in details about our show and other podcasts as well, and, you know, blog posts.
General sort of Ubuntu weekly news things.
Yeah, and, you know, we've ripped some stuff from them before now for the show, so, you know, it works both ways.
Yeah. A new announce-only mailing list has been set up to publicise jobs at Canonical and within the community and partner arena. That's a good idea.
Nice.
Yeah, so we've got the like Linux jobs list on the lug.org.uk, and now we've got Ubuntu jobs on the lists.ubuntu.com.
Hmm. Yes, yeah, so that means presumably the recruitment drive is going to continue at a reasonable pace.
Yeah, it seems that way. There's loads of jobs listed on their website.
Hmm. There usually is, you know, a big chunk of... Some of them have actually been there for quite some time as well.
Yeah.
So it's quite interesting.
Can't find the right people.
Can't find the right people. They're picky.
Mm.
They really? Only recruit the best.
Apparently so.
Ding!
Which is why none of us work for them.
Yeah, it didn't work like that for Lug Radio, did it?
Actually, one of the first posts to that mailing list is an interview with Ack about what it's like to work at Canonical.
Cool. Josh Shields has released a new version of his Grub theme, which mirrors the Ubuntu default logon screen for kernel selection.
Yeah, it's quite nice, isn't it?
Yeah. So, you know, the Grub screen where you normally see a bunch of text that's got, like, Ubuntu 9.10 and then the kernel version.
Hit tab,
and
hit
it's been a long time since I saw that.
That kind of... Yeah, because we hide it now, don't we? You have to press a button to see it. But even then, it's not pretty. Mm. And he's made a nice screen that looks just like the logon screen with, like, the grey and the logo at the top and a list and the purple background and stuff.
Yeah, it's very nice.
Sweet.
Well, you don't see it if you've only got Ubuntu on there, but if you're dual booting or have more than one version
dual
of Ubuntu...
Dual booting? How dare you?
Yeah, you can dual boot different versions of Ubuntu.
Or Ubuntu and Linux Mint.
Yeah.
Nah.
Or Ubuntu and Debian or whatever. But yes, 10. So you would now see the proper Ubuntu. I like it. It's really nice.
Yeah, it is sweet.
It adds really a little good. Bit of polish because it is one of those things, black background, it. White text. People go, oh, what is that?
Oh, I'm on a mainframe.
Yeah. The Open Invention Network has announced its associate member program and has recruited Canonical as its first associate member.
So what's the OIN? What do they do?
They are the one of the patent portfolio organisations. I think that people can contribute patents to. Oh, sorry, companies can contribute patents to and say we're going to contribute to these to them. We want to the pool. We are not going to sue open source projects who are using these patents. I believe.
And do Canonical have any patents to contribute to the pool? Do you know?
I don't know. I've not followed their patent policy.
Hmm.
But maybe that's why they're only an associate member rather than a full member. So it's companies who sort of work with and support Linux, so maybe they want to be protected against potential lawsuits from some of the bigger members who are sort of IBM, NEC, or NEC, even Novell, Philips, Red Hat, and Sony.
It's time for your feedback. Todd Norris, Ian Barton, and Phil Thompson emailed in about web content filtering with Ubuntu. They all use OpenDNS.
Ian also told us about Ebox, which provides a web-based configuration panel for Squid, Dan's Guardian, and more. Man America also told us about the parental control GUI, and Shane Fagan, who was developing a simple parental control app, let us know about Gnome Nanny, which does much of what he planned.
Hmm. Yeah, you were talking about this last time, weren't you, Alan, about your policy. Do you filter, do you block for your young kids as they get a bit older and get a bit more onto the net?
And it seems to be quite a popular thing to think about and...
Yeah,
well,
the OpenDNS Family Shield project is a way of blocking access to websites by basically mucking up the DNS entries for all the dodgy sites.
Oh.
And setting them to something non-existent or whatever.
Okay, so you just get a blank page or a warning or an error.
Yeah, I've not tried it. I assume you get a blank page or right.
Something other than the
message,
page.
Yeah, something other than you know.
Drug, of course, the problem with that is you're outsourcing it to someone else, and you're dependent upon their decision of what is good and bad content.
True.
So if they decide that pages about Tiananmen Square or pages about abortion should be not seen,
yeah,
you know, that might not fit with your decision of what is vetoable and good.
On the flip side, it's very easy because you're just changing your DNS entry on your router. So
yeah, absolutely.
Job done.
Yeah.
So. For a minimal effort solution. Yeah,
almost near zero effort.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even the sort of effort you were prepared to go to.
Well,
but one of the things we were talking about was the GUI side of things and not having to muck around with squid config and all that sort of stuff. So it sounds like there are actually some projects to introduce that a little bit more.
Yeah, readily. The Gnome Nanny one looks interesting.
It's a cool name.
Yeah.
Simon Bennett emailed to tell us all about the new government website.
At OggCamp, there was a lot of discussion about the Digital Economy Act. You might be aware of the new government website by Nick Clegg, where people can nominate laws they'd like to see repealed. And I present to you the Digital Economy Act, and there's a link, which is linkpot.net/fairway.
Yeah, this is trying to get... It's like the old government website where you have...
It's a brainstorm almost, isn't
it? Yeah, a list of suggestions of which... acts you want to see repealed.
Mm. And about 8 people at least have nominated the Digital Economy Act.
Including Jim Kellogg from the org. But I was a little bit confused when I read that because I couldn't see what I was supposed to do.
No, there doesn't seem to be an obvious Me Too button. Everybody's submitting their own things. So but yet, at the bottom of them, there's a post basically saying, this seems to be a duplicate of X, Y, and Z. There's not. But they should have used Launchpad, basically, because then they could merge them and they could ticket them and then people could say...
You mean IdeaPad or something?
Yeah.
But IdeaStorm or something.
It hasn't got as perhaps the full features as some of the more sophisticated...
So that's a good design by the government, then? Because you can't actually do what you want to do?
It says Nick Clegg did it.
Yeah, he's up like... He's in the government. He's actually a Django...
Until 4 in the morning.
He's a Django developer.
Chatting with Sill. How the hell do I get it to do this?
How do you make it recognise on Chrome? And
can't get CouchDB to work.
Antigrata. Oh, God. Why can't people just have normal names on Twitter?
Going Frank.
And John sent us a DM on Twitter.
Your interviews typically need to have better planned questions and to be shorter and better edited. However, UDS interviews were a huge improvement.
The deep irony being, thanks, Frank, at UDS, there was zero planning. Me and Dave walked around on the very last day of UDS with Tony's handheld recorder and without any planning whatsoever, just walked up to people and went, will you be interviewed by us, please? And they went, yeah, all right. And in some cases, no. And we forced them to anyway.
People do say no quite a lot, don't
they? Yeah, they do. But we calmed them down. And then we just asked them questions. There was zero planning. So... an interesting bit of feedback.
It is, because it's got to be, you know, if you hit them with pre-planned questions, it gets really quite boring. And you know.
Well, they could be pre-planned that we've thought of. Not told them.
Sure.
You know. To be fair, whenever you've got Dave in an interview, there's always an element of randomness that comes creeping in.
Why, yes, I'm glad you asked me that.
I'm not sure it's the planning so much as the locations often, because, I mean, standing outside the toilets on the Eurostar or in a pub, and it adds a little bit of
something. Je ne sais quoi.
We have done interviews in lots of different ways. I mean, we've had Matthew Paul Thomas here in my kitchen.
Yep.
We've had the two Allens and Simon Phipps in Studio A at your house. We've had people on the phone like Matt Griffin and
Mark Shuttleworth.
Mark Shuttleworth on the phone. We've
Matt
interviewed people
at our house.
And we've had interviews with people in my hotel room at UDS.
Yep.
The guy from Freescale, uh-huh, and also Ack and Matt Griffin was done in my hotel room.
Mm-hmm.
So we
did a load at UDS in Mountain View in what was essentially a broom cupboard.
Yes.
About eight people crammed into it.
That got a bit hot and sweaty, didn't it? Did.
So really what we're saying is that you're lucky that they get done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we don't do a huge amount of editing. Simon does all the heavy lifting on the editing. But in order to keep our workflow light, we don't edit. Mm. As you can probably tell from listening to the show.
It's tricky because none of us are journalists.
It's not going to appeal to everybody. A lot of people got a lot out of the interviews, but not everybody. So, we'll take it on board. But
yeah, well, it's good.
Yeah, well, no, we appreciate it.
It was positive
feedback,
so that's good.
We are getting better.
Yeah. Practice makes perfect.
Yeah, he said the UDS interviews were a huge improvement, and those are the most recent ones we've done. So that must be good.
Cool. We'll take that as a pat on the back.
Yeah, let's just not go downhill from there.
We had some feed camp from Og Camp. Sorry,
feed camp. Feed camp, great idea.
Just coming off the back of the professionalism comment. practice makes perfect. Right, we had some feedback from Og Camp, or about Og Camp, which is all 2 months ago now. But this is the first time that we've had four of us together since Og Camp, which is really quite scary. Someone commented on our blog asking if we really use the first 8 minutes of the live show for thanking people.
Yes.
To which we said, yes, we did.
We did.
Thank you for listening.
thank you for leaving your comment.
Thank
on
you
the
for leaving
blog.
Your comment.
No,
those
you.
Are all the people who really do actually make that event happen. So, absolutely. Some of them are sort of commercial sponsors.
You're not going to list
cash.
Them now, are you?
No. But I'm saying some of them are commercial sponsors who gave us cash, some of them gave us equipment, and some of them just gave their time. So, they deserve some thanks.
Yep.
Come along, and then you can fall asleep during the actual live first 8 minutes and wake up for the rest of it.
Yeah.
At least it's better than the 20-odd that we did on the first Og Camp, doing a raffle.
We did a raffle for 20 minutes last time.
Whose idea was that?
Yeah, come on, it's getting better.
Raffle was good fun.
The raffle this year was brilliant.
But we didn't record it.
We did record it. We haven't released it.
Did we?
Yeah.
Oh. I didn't know we recorded that.
I think I'm going to bootleg it in about 20 years'
time. It was really quite funny, actually.
There'll be bands touring across Europe who'll be listening to our raffle.
Us getting running
drunk.
Around like loonies with books to people at the back of the room.
But we started a trend.
Mm.
The Smugcast now do on recorded raffles.
They give away slightly different prizes than we did, though.
Yeah, I'm not going to ask on a family show.
No, probably best not to.
Okay. Nigel Verity said,
"The Black E was certainly a more suitable venue than the hotel in Wolverhampton last year. However, I think that if you do it again, you should consider a venue in the south, i.e. striking distance from London."
Striking distance from Alan's house.
Alan's house. No. "We have to recognise that the centre of gravity of the UK, our population, is in the south, and so that is presumably where we'll find the biggest concentration of floss enthusiasts."
There's a can of worms.
Genuine email, not written or made up by us.
Yeah, we didn't write that, despite all of us living in the south.
A couple of people have said please do it in the south next time.
The fact
is
fine. The first year we did it, we were piggybacking off of Lug Radio, so we couldn't exactly say after Wolverhampton, right, all of you come down south now.
Yeah.
And then this year, with it being done in Liverpool, we were doing a joint thing with Dan Lynch's Rat Hole Radio the night before, and he was organising loads of stuff in Liverpool, so it made sense for him to
give
local.
Him even more to do.
But also it's quite nice to alternate or something, because otherwise all the people in the north have to pay to come down south,
and it's not cheap to do something in London. I probably would say I don't think Og Camp will be in London
ever.
No, absolutely not, unless
there's a big sponsor find us a venue.
Nigel does say within striking distance of London. I'm not sure what that means,
but
you
even
know.
Striking distance of London,
an hour on the train. Let's say an hour on the train gets you to here, or your house.
Og Camp France.
Excellent.
Come up with a venue and let us know, and then we can use it.
Simon, are you an hour from London? Can we have it at your house?
That's a good idea.
Do it on the Salisbury Plain.
Ooh.
Og Camp the Henge edition.
Get the truth.
Mini Henges.
You're not coming into the stones. Go away.
Tony Webster wrote in,
The general atmosphere was great, and given the resource constraints, the organisation I thought was excellent. Get that?
Yes. Excellent. Excellent.
My only criticism, which I don't know how you get round, is that there is usually a clash for the talks we were interested in. Any chance the transcripts, slides, videos, etc. of the talks being put up somewhere at some stage?
Yes. Matt Daubney has put up some of the talks on his Blip TV account, which I think we're linking from the Ogcamp website.
Yeah, daubers.blip.tv.
I'm probably out of date with that. So.
But he certainly had a few up there.
Try and update that.
Maybe we could email all the people, because we know who talked, if we could ask them for their slides, and maybe we could put them on the website.
That's true.
And the Talkos chaps did video the main stage talks.
I don't think they're still working on it.
I haven't seen anything released yet anyway, so... Hopefully they will. I'm just worried. I've just loaded up Matt's account, and I think it's about to start playing. Yeah, so he's got the keynote from Simon Phipps up there, and the panel discussion.
And my Mumbuntu.
And your Mumbuntu. Yeah.
Yes.
So I think those are quite a good selection there. But there's always a bit of a conflict. You can't please everybody. So many good quality talks. You can't get to them.
Well, I think that's a sign of success.
It is.
If there's loads of talks and you're conflicted as to which ones you want to go to, that's much better than staring at a page and thinking, well, there's nothing really I want to go to.
Might as well go to the pub.
Yeah.
My mum recommended Mumbuntu.
Oh, thank you. My mum recommends it as well.
You're doing well in your target demographic, then, aren't you? Two out of two mums who've tried it.
Simon Benny added,
I attended Ogcamp and had a really great time. I just wanted to say thank you for all your hard work that you put into the event. It was really great. Are there any more T-shirts or mugs left that we can buy?
Funny you should ask that.
I think all the T-shirts went, didn't they?
Yes.
There may be a handful left, but basically I think they've all gone.
Katie did a fantastic job of flogging everybody a T-shirt, pretty much.
Yeah. But there are a few mugs left. And Dan, I think, is trying to...
One of them's in Liverpool!
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
Dan, I think, is working out how he can arrange shipping. I think Dan's mum is going to be employed to take them all down to the post office on a regular basis. But yeah, so listen to Linux Outlaws, I guess, and hopefully he'll be able to tell you about that at some point.
Mm-hmm. Listen to us too.
Yeah, of course. But, you know.
Everybody unsubscribes in order to find out about mugs.
Because you can only listen to one podcast at a time.
Yes. Yeah.
But, you know, listen to Linux Outlaws. Hopefully they'll have some news sooner or later. And that's all your feedback. That's it for this time. We'll be back in a couple of weeks, but in the meantime, you can send us all your feedback or voicemail or tweet or dent or whatever via the huge list of means that are listed on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org.
Yeah, see you next time.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Love you. Bye.